Our job is to push and stretch the boundaries of what it means to be American, to continually write a chapter in the evolving, messy, rough draft of America, and to bum rush the show. Yo!
Hey, welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics and the race to the White House in 2016. We are the show that examines this week's political coverage through a diverse lens with different perspectives and with super cool people. I'm your host, Maria Hinojosa. In Washington, D.C., we're joined by Wajahat Ali. He's an attorney, a playwright, a commentator, just an all-American Renaissance man. Welcome back to the show.
I represent the super cool contingency of America today.
And with us in our Harlem studio is Julio Ricardo Varela. He's the political editor for the Futuro Media Group. Julio, it's good to see you in the studio.
Always great to be here.
And for the second week in a row, this is a first for In the Thick. And we're going to tell you why. But we have brought back a guest from last week. Her name is Veronica Valletti Flores. She's a freelance writer and the co-host of Radio Menea. And welcome back, Veronica.
Thanks for having me back, Maria.
I wanted to start this week with an exchange, actually, from last week's episode of In the Thick, which, by the way, was the most listened to episode so far on In the Thick. And we got a lot of really good feedback from our listeners who actually wanted to hear this part of the conversation to continue. So here's a clip from the conversation between Veronica and Julio, where we left off last week.
There are Republicans out there who still will say that there are certain things that he's saying that are inherently and essentially un-American.
That's interesting to me because I feel like what Trump is saying is actually very American. I think that racism and colonization is actually what this country is largely built on. And we like to talk about how this country was built on freedom, but it was also built on slaves and on the genocide of indigenous people and on the oppression of folks like LGBTQ Latinos. So in some sense, I think it sounds very un-American what Trump is saying. But on the other hand, I think that it's actually distinctly American.
Okay, that was a mic drop moment, Julio. I know that you and I were just like, what?
It was a mic drop moment. And it totally spoke to how convoluted and complicated America really is. Like the United States really is. I think the point about how this country has been built and how it's idealized and then how sort of the reality of this country doesn't get talked about a lot.
Isn't Orlando, in a way, like the perfect way to kind of open up this huge truth about who we really are and use it as a way to dive back into, hold on, who are we in the United States?
That's exactly right. I think that the tragedy in Orlando, at least for me, spoke to the ways that people of color in this country are experiencing something in the context of a legacy of violence, right? And it's not an isolated incident. It's actually part of an entire legacy.
So, Waj, you weren't on the show last week, but what do you think about this conversation?
You know, we have to acknowledge the fact that we have these foundations, the Supreme Court, Congress, the White House, these buildings that espouse the values of freedom and tolerance, these American values that we cherish and that we export to the world, the beacon, which is why so many immigrants have come to this country. My family, for example, Pakistani immigrants, Muslims. And yet, those same foundations that espouse these values were built by slaves, black men, women, and children who were denied their humanity. And 15% to 30% of the slave trade that was brought over here forcibly against its will was Muslim. I think what Donald Trump represents, it's not a supporting character. It's this competing, like, darkness that is rooted within American soil, which is, I think, rooted, let's be honest, with racist violence and racial violence.
So, Veronica, when you hear Republicans from the party basically claim that they are up in arms around what Donald Trump is saying, that they have problems with Donald Trump is saying, do you believe that this is hypocritical on their part?
Absolutely, Maria. It makes me almost laugh to see Republicans clutching their collective pearls about Donald Trump saying things that are explicitly racist against Muslim Americans, explicitly, Islamophobic and xenophobic and racist against Mexican Americans, because they've spent the last decade, two decades, being implicit about it, implying that immigrants are here to steal jobs, implying that we have come here to reproduce and use our babies as anchors to stay in this country. Republicans have been pushing legislation that demonizes low-income people, demonizes especially low-income people of color that rely on government assistance. And now that somebody's being explicit about their racism, now they're upset. Stop that.
But when did that change? Because after 2001, you have George Bush's Islam is peace speech.
The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace.
How did that happen in the last 10 years, 11 years, where now you're looking at a national Republican candidate who's saying things that are so extreme that even George W. Bush is now seen as sort of a lefty liberal type person?
I think it's an excellent thematic microcosm of everything we've talked about, is that George W. Bush, first and foremost, would not be elected in 2016 by the Republican base because he'd be seen as too pro-Muslim. The irony. I think what Donald Trump represents is the overt manifestation of Islamophobia, of bigotry. The analogy I give is like Dr. Frankenstein, who is shocked that his monster that he created out of spare parts has now come to life and attacked the lab and attacked the village. Like, what happened? We thought this would be a great idea. You know, the fact that we deliberately said Obama was a Muslim, even though we knew he wasn't. And now in 2015, according to a September CNN poll, check out these numbers, 29% of registered independent voters think Obama's a Muslim. This is just from a couple of months ago. 40% of Republicans and 54% of Trump supporters. And because they think he's a Muslim, even though he's not a Muslim.
Wait, he's not a Muslim?
He eats bacon openly and drinks alcohol and says Jesus is his savior.
And he
Guys,
smokes.
If Obama
he
is a Muslim,
cigarettes.
He is the worst Muslim of all time. And yet, because people think he's quote unquote Muslimy, they think he's un-American. And so then people say, all these Republicans are like, how did this happen? And they don't want to see in the mirror and see the ugly reality of their rhetoric and policies. And let's just say the ugly reality of America.
So what does it mean to be American for you? As a college student, I will say, yeah, I was like, no me digas que soy americana. But now at this point in my life, I'm like, oh, no. I am an American citizen. My husband is. My kids are. We live here. This is my country. I am 100% American. And I tell my students, you have to own your Americanness and call yourself American.
You know, I think, Maria, I agree with you. When I wasn't born in this country, I was naturalized a few years ago. And when I go back to Venezuela, I'm a gringa, you know? And even though Americans might not be ready to accept me, I do see myself as being part of a long, long legacy of resistance, right? I'm not the first person to have these opinions. Indigenous people here whose land was taken away fought back. Slaves fought back. And that has a legacy in America too, and I'm part of that.
If we weren't allowed to have these rights, you know, to express ourselves, to resist, the ability to resist, that to me is a fundamental like right that very few people in this world have. And I take that sort of sense of expression is to be inherently American. And so that's where I feel like I have the right to say that, you know, America, this country is not exceptional. And I'm not going to get, you know, I can say that right now. I could say it out in New York City and I'm just as proudly American as anybody else.
Damn right I'm American. I'll be damned if I let anyone ever take that away from me. I was born and raised in this country. And not only am I going to fight for the American narrative and the American dream, I'm going to fight to be the protagonist of the American narrative with a multisyllable, trisyllabic name with brown skin who drinks chai when he kisses his wife who was the high school cheerleader. And I'm going to make sure that my son, Ibrahim, who's 2 years old, will grow up in America where he too can say, you know what, maybe I can be president. And all that matters is my character and my, you know, goodwill. And if I can raise a lot of money from lobbyists. But why not me? If I too can be, you know, why not Ibrahim Ali? And it's our job, especially, you know, it's a tough burden, especially for a person of color. If you're a minority, if you're a Muslim, you can, you know, fill in the blank if you want to empathize. But our job is to push and stretch the boundaries of what it means to be American, to continually write a chapter in the evolving, messy, rough draft of America and to bum rush the show, to quote Public Enemy from the late 80s and early 90s, because no one's going to give it to us. Even though, yes, it is a right according to its values, what we've seen in the underbelly of America is that there's a darkness that wants to rob us of our dignity, of our rights, of our place, of our rightful place in this story.
And we're saying no.
Hell no. Yeah, I'm American. You say you're American? Well, I'm just as American as you, and I'm going to prove I'm even more American than you by basically living out these values that you celebrate but don't necessarily live up to. I'm going to do it for not only myself, but for all Americans.
Veronica, are you proud to be an American? You had to raise that right hand just like me and pledge to this country.
I'm not going to lie, Maria, it was very, very difficult. It was very difficult to sign those papers. It was very emotional for me.
Why was it difficult?
It was difficult, Maria, because I think that part of the reason why I am in the United States is because of the United States. When you look at the United States as a global superpower and the foreign policy and the economic policy, it's caused a lot of trouble in South America. It's caused a lot of trouble where I'm from. And the economic devastation that forces people to come to this country is not out of thin air. It's because of foreign policy. It's because of decisions that are often and largely made in the United States. So I am an American because I've been displaced from a country that I called home. And now I'm here. And now this is my home. And yes, I'm super excited that there's so many rights that I have and that I can say that on here and nobody's going to come arrest me. But I also read the news last week that the NYPD just gave up a huge vault of all of the files that they from when they spied on the Young Lords, from when they spied on the Black Panthers. So it's not quite as easy as we have the right to say whatever we want. And there's no consequence for that. And I think that it's not quite as easy as I'm in the United States and I'm proud to be here because I think the United States has a hand in me being here.
And Julio, are you proud?
Yeah, why not?
That's not a great answer.
No,
yeah, why not?
But that's my question. Why are you questioning? Yeah. Do I have to wrap myself around the flag and be like, you know, sing I'm proud to be an American, like the song that everyone sings? Proud in America? Like, do I have to do that? No, my America is a very different type of America. It's places that reflect sort of a world, a changing country that is for the better.
And Waj, proud?
I am. I'll tell you, I live in a very interesting time with an interesting identity because in America, I'm asked, why does Islam hate us? And when I travel abroad, and I often do, I'm asked to represent America, and Muslims ask me, why does the West hate us? And simultaneously, I'm both us and them. As an American Muslim living in 2016 America, right? In 2016 in the world. And it's fascinating that I always defend both. I defend Muslims, Islam, I defend America. But listen, I still think, and many American Muslims still think, that America is the best place for a Muslim to be an open practicing Muslim. Yes, even now in 2016 America, with Trump, with the 1.6 billion proposed ban, many of us still say, if you gave us a choice of any country in the world right now, including Muslim majority countries, where can you be fully, openly, authentically Muslim and still have a shot at the dream, if it's the American dream, the global dream, or just the dream of success and happiness. And I guarantee you, based on all the polls and stats, most American Muslims would say, I'll still stick with the American project. I'll invest my roots here.
I just want to let you know that In the Thick is a listener-supported podcast. Your contributions help us to do what we do and to bring you these diverse perspectives that you don't hear anywhere else. Your gifts at any level truly do make a difference. If you can go to inthethick.org, click on the donate button. Every single contribution really helps. And there's one more thing that you can do. If you can rate and review us on iTunes, this helps to get new listeners to find us. So if you can do that, muchas gracias. Thanks. Let's move on to have a conversation now about guns and gun control. After the attack in Orlando last week, Chris Murphy, a Democratic senator from Connecticut, started a filibuster which led the Senate to vote on four small measures of gun control. All of them failed. Now, we often talk about the issue of gun control through the lens of the NRA's power, but actually, we don't talk a lot about gun control through the prism of race. So in a recent Pew survey, 75% of Latinos And 72% of African Americans support gun control, but only 40% of white Americans support the same. With all of the blame being hurled right now at Muslims or terrorists, is this a problem that is essentially coming from the white American community?
Yes.
Tell us how you really feel, Julio.
Take the case of the Senate, that filibuster. Sure, Senator Murphy, great for you for speaking out. But look at the list of people that voted no. Mostly white, male, older dudes who are speaking out about this and voting against this type of gun measure. And I don't see America in the Senate, right? And I think that's part of the problem. When you look at this survey, where it's clear that like people in communities of color want gun control. And they see it. It's such a daily occurrence. And it's something that you talk to this community, and that's what they want, and they're not being listened to.
A lot of the rhetoric from the left has been about preventing people who are on the suspected terrorist list from buying guns. But I was wondering, shouldn't they be focused on things like, I mean, what I was thinking, assault rifle bans, background checks, mental health services? Is there a moment that's also being missed to actually do some bigger conversations around gun control?
So I actually have two comments. I did some research for you guys. African Americans, who represent 13% of America's population, make up, anyone take a guess, more than half of overall gun murder victims. Roughly 15 of the 30 Americans murdered with guns each day are black men, all right? And in these black urban neighborhoods, many of these populations experience PTSD, guys, associated with war veteran survivors. That's happening in America. One part of the answer is there is a racial component to gun violence in America and the resistance to gun control. Now, the second part is, let's take Sandy Hook. That was mostly white children who were killed. And if you can't move a population to gun control, is specifically what you're saying, Maria, which sounds very reasonable, what you just listed, right? If you can't move a population with the sight of, what, nearly two dozen dead white children in an elementary school, what does that say about America? And I think you're going to see a resistance which is rooted in, quote-unquote, false patriotism, racism, and money. And finally, I think something which is fundamentally, and I know people might not like hearing this, American. This is an American problem. Violence and pacification of minority communities, for many people who feel like they have no control left in America, that they're no longer in power. I think that gun symbolizes that last vestige, if you will, of what it means for them to be American.
So what about this watch list and the fact that the Democrats have put so much attention on it? Again, it's, you know, like, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to do what Trump is going to say, but we're going to say there's a terror watch list. Of course, I think about all of the lists that have existed in our country in the past, the black list, the Japanese American list, the Mexican list. It's another list.
There's a Mexican list?
There needs to be a BuzzFeed article about this. About all the
Listicle on list.
Well, you know, in the 1930s, that was the largest mass deportation many of them were not Mexicans. They were American citizens of Mexican ancestry who were deported. So, yeah, there have been lists.
I do not think we should let Democrats off the hook on this one. Mm. Let's be honest. If you really start looking into the shooting, the ISIS thing, that's a crock.
He pledged allegiance to ISIS and Hezbollah at the same time, even though they hate each other. It's a red herring.
And Democrats are now using that red herring to be like, ooh, the terrorist watch list. We got to protect ourselves from Muslims. They're not saying it like a Donald Trump Republican supporter says it, but there's like coded. It's sort of so subtle in how they're trying to present this, like, terror list is going to make you feel safe.
Well, who's on the terror list, though? And how do you check if you're on the terror list?
Veronica, jump in on this whole notion of the terror list becoming the thing that the Democrats are focusing on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely Islamophobic. It's racist and it's ridiculous.
Democrats are saying it. And I don't hear a lot of progressives out there going, hey, guys, whoa. Like,
yeah, stop.
Stop. Like, yeah. Let's stop. Like, we're doing the same things that Republicans are doing. And they're not being called out on it.
There's a recent study from the journal Political Behavior, which I wanted to share with you because we did our research too, Waj. Researchers asked white participants about gun laws. But before they asked them, the researchers showed these participants pictures of African Americans. The participants who were shown pictures of African Americans before answering questions about gun laws were much more likely to oppose gun control. So essentially, white folks, after seeing these pictures of African Americans, felt like they needed to have more access to guns, not less access to guns. So what do you think? I mean, can we talk about guns without bringing in the issue of race.
I don't think we can talk about any political issue in this country without addressing race. I think it's deeply ingrained in the way we think about everything, including the ways that we think about violence. In this country, Black people are seen as a threat, and the state is murdering them. The police is murdering them at ridiculous rates. So we cannot talk about gun violence without talking about race.
So we are going to move on to our final segment now. It's called Noam's Family List. For those of you who listen to us, you know that Noam, our producer, his family sat around and came up with a list of things that they would like to hear us comment on. And so everybody gets to choose their final thought. Here's what you can choose from: Fantasy CNN, What's Missing, Tough Questions, and What We've Got Wrong. So Waj, which one do you want to choose?
Just to show you, since I'm such a trooper and an honor student, I actually prepared three segments, but I'm going to go with Question of the Week. Dear Mr. Trump, considering your campaign has amassed a historically low $1.2 million compared to Clinton's $42 million, how will you make America's economy great again when you can't even inspire Americans to financially invest in your presidential campaign?
Boom.
That's question one.
Okay.
Second question. Mr. Trump, you suggest that Muslims are unwilling and unable to assimilate and integrate into America. If that's the case, why do so many Republicans in Washington, D.C. accept money and jobs from Muslim-majority countries to lobby on their behalf? Are they complicit in un-American behavior, or simply hypocrites, liars, agents of Muslims, or easily bought?
Ooh, nice. Veronica, your topic.
So I am going for What's Missing. And one of the things that I've been hearing a lot about because of my personal work, but not a lot in the news, is the scandal that is currently rocking the Oakland Police Department. Mm-hmm. They have gone through three chiefs of police in a matter of like a week. And it's all based on a number of scandals around this, the statutory rape of a young queer Latina, multiple police officers have admitted to and been found out to be having sex with her, raping her while she was underage. It just hasn't been part of the news. And I think that what's important about uplifting this story is that sexual assault and sexual violence is actually endemic to American policing, and it's not particularly unique to Oakland.
Julio. Mine is What's Missing. So the National Association of Latino Elected Officials, NALEO, has their annual conference, and they invited all the presidential candidates, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Gary Johnson, and Bernie Sanders, who's still in the race. I just want to remind everyone. And both Clinton and Trump said no. And this is like the largest.
What? To NALEO?
To NALEO. This is the largest.
What?
Like group of elected Latino officials.
Veronica has her mouth wide open. But like, what?
But guess who's going? Gary Johnson and Bernie Sanders. So I've been really bad with predictions, Maria, in this election. But I think I'm going to feel good about this one. Because Gary Johnson will probably get about 10 to 15% of the Latino vote if all just for showing up.
Okay, mine is a Fantasy CNN, and I just really want to give some props out because Media Matters put out a study recently that showed that in terms of the cable coverage around post-Orlando, there were teeny tiny percentages of Latinos and LGBTQ people and Muslims who were included in the national conversations on cable about these stories. So as a result of that, I actually want to give you, Veronica, a total shout out. Also to Matt Rodriguez from Mike.com, because you guys as Latinx, queer identified journalists have really helped us on In the Thick and on Latino USA to really get to the complexity of the issue. And so if I was doing Fantasy CNN, I'd be hiring you guys to be on a panel.
Aw, oh, thank you, Maria.
From your lips to God's ears.
Thank you guys for being part of In the Thick this week. Wajahat Ali, he's an attorney, a playwright, and a commentator based in Washington, D.C. Veronica Valletti Flores, who's a freelance writer and the co-host of Radio Menea. And Julio Ricardo Varela, he's the political editor for the Futuro Media Group here in Harlem. Thanks again for joining me on this week's episode of In the Thick.
Thank you, Maria.
A lot of fun, as always. Thanks so much for having us.
I'm your host, Maria Hinojosa. Remember, go to iTunes. It'll take you a second, but it means a lot to us if you can just rate and review us, because that gets us more followers. You can also find us on Twitter at In The Thick Show. You can like us on Facebook and, you know, tell your family and friends to listen. Our producer is Noam Hassenfeld. Our director of content is Ted Canova. Some of the music that you heard is composed by Noam, and some of the other music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Records. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of In the Thick, this time a special edition recorded at the Aspen Ideas Festival. So until then, ciao.